of all, I wish, of course, to thank the organizers for this very nice conference. It's a pleasure for me to be here. So, the thing I would like to speak about is the output of a sabbatical year I spent at Ecole Polytechnique, and it was a genuine pluridisciplinary experience that I enjoyed very much, and which will continue, I hope. And so I would like to show you the output of this experience. So, first of all, this work came out in two papers. So this was the first paper about this. It was a physical review letter which appeared last year, and now there is another paper which is concerns the mathematical development of the material, which is submitted. Okay. So, in the three or four first parts, I will present the physics of the problem, the experimental part, the simulation parts, etc. So, I must tell you first that in these three things, I will just report about what I know about this, but I didn't take part of this. I took part in the mathematical treatment of this. So, and of course, I'm not a physicist, so please don't laugh too loud if I say stupid things about the physics. So what is this about? So if you consider polymers that possess electrical charges that are called polyelectrolytes, so some of them are, so they are soluble in the water because of hydrogen bonding. And the water molecules, so I will show you some movies about that. So the water molecule exhibit a dynamics made of two different kinds. So the first one is adsorption step, where there are the actual hydrogen bonding, so they stick to the polymer molecules, and followed by diffusion in the liquid, and the diffusion is just Brownian motion. So here is an example of hydrogen bonding. So you see there are two kinds of hydrogen bondings. Either it's attached by oxygen or by hydrogen. And actually, the two dynamics are actually dynamics. When they are adsorbed on the molecule, they can actually move on the molecule by just, let me show you, I found, well, this is, I'm not responsible for this, but I found this and it's, so I'm sorry, but there is a problem with PowerPoint, apparently. So when there is a movie, it goes out of the program. So here you see how it can move. So you see the molecule comes, and then it may walk a little bit on the molecule and then continue. So that's the idea. Then it takes a while to come back. Sorry. Then it doesn't come back. So we can see the water, these dynamics as intermittent dynamics, so flights around the surface, which we would call in some sense quick motion, followed by a slow motion on the surface itself. But even if the motion here is slow, it is extremely, it would not last long. Okay? So in this talk, except at the very end, we will ignore the adsorption steps and speak only about Brownian flight. At the very end, I will speak a little bit about future projects, about what can, if we take in account the dynamics of the molecule itself. So what we are interested in is the statistics of the flights. So we start from one point of the boundary, so there is a Brownian flight inside the water, and eventually the molecule comes back to the molecule, to the polymer. And well, we wish to study the statistics of either the duration or the length of these Brownian flights, and try to connect these statistics to the geometry of the surface. So again, there is a movie. So here is an example. So you have here an irregular surface, and and we have shown a few steps here. So, of course, the idea is that the surface on which we are going to do these jumps are very irregular and they can present very different shapes. So let me show you some shapes that we will consider next. So there's something missing here. Okay, so for the duration, so the duration of a flight is typically a random variable, and we will call psi of t its density, okay, the density of the loop. And we will call theta of r, it should be, I don't know why it's not, and theta, that's because it doesn't, it's again, it has gone out of the program, sorry about that. Okay, and theta of r will be the density of the length of the flight. Okay, so here, let me show you a few examples just to give you an idea. So for this is an example of a polymer looking like something like DNA. And so it will be, it can be a curve in the space, okay? Curve which will be fractal, okay? Which has to be fractal, by the way, because if it is rectifiable, then it is not seen by the Brownian motion. So we will come to this later. This is a protein which looks like more a surface, okay? And we can also have some kind of colloidal suspension, which mathematically would more look like countersets. And we can make Brownian flights from these kind of shapes. And this will be also, of course, interesting. This is DNA unwrapped and put on a flat surface. And this, of course, reminds us of self-avoiding warps. So we will be also working with self-avoiding warps. Okay, so now the main point, and I insist on that because that's very important, is that all this is done because we can actually measure this thing. And I try to, well, it's difficult for me because I didn't understand completely this process of nuclear magnetic resonance, but this apparatus allows us to actually measure these things. So let me show you. So it's called relaxometry methods in nuclear magnetic resonance. Let me show you, try to explain to you this. Okay, so the idea is to put a little sample of the solution with the polymers or whatever in this apparatus and then put it in a big, huge magnetic field. Okay, this magnetic field has the effect of orienting every particle in the same direction. And now, at the top of it, we put a sinusoidal magnetic field, which kind of messes up the system and puts the arrows of a few amount of molecules in the solution in the other direction. Okay, so this puts the system out of equilibrium, and then we stop and look at how long does it take to come back to the equilibrium. This is the reaction. Relaxing time. Okay? And the main point is that this relaxing time is related to the... So what is this I of t? Okay, it's important that the particles, this magnetic business only concerns particles which are on the surface, okay, for some reasons. And then it means here that when they are on the surface, these are the adsorption times, very small. And when they are here, they have some kind of intensity here, magnetic intensity. And between them, these are the durations of the flights. Okay? And so the relaxing time, which depends, F I didn't tell, but F is the frequency of the signal we put in. This is the sinusoidal signal with some frequency, which is f here. It will be omega in the next slide. Sorry about that. It's just a Fourier transform of this function, so it can actually be computed. And then we can test some conjecture we make about this. So we can test if we think that psi l of t is 1 over t to the alpha. We can just compute here and test to see if it fits with the actual data we get. I will show you later.
So psi of t is the density property that the duration of the flight is t.
Is t, yeah, exactly.
Not longer than t.
Yeah. And of course, this, I didn't tell this, but we are only interested in long times. Okay. So this is for t large. So now, how can we mathematically simulate a flight? Well, that's quite naive. That was a very naive approach, which is the right one, I guess. So we just consider a surface of a curve which is fractal up to a certain scale. Okay, of course, there is physically, it's only fractal up to, there will be two places. Okay, then at the macroscopic order, it will be fractal, but at the microscopic order, which we have to consider here, it's atomic, so it's a different kind of behavior, physical behavior. So we take typically a piecewise affine approximation of a self-affine curve. We'll show you examples later. And and then we pick at random one of these little affine piece and consider a point in the complement of the surface nearby this piece, okay? At a distance from this piece, which is say comparable to the size of this little segment. Okay, and then we start a Brownian motion from this point, which will be stopped when it hits back the surface, and consider the length and duration of this flight. So of course, most of the flights will end almost immediately because you start very near the boundary. So most of the flight will hit back the boundary. But some of them will go quite a long time, and we are interested in these.
What is the length?
Oh, the length is the length between the starting point and the hitting point, the first hitting point. Okay. Sorry?
So you measure the distance.
Euclidean distance, yes.
So you measure the distance just from the space, not along the curve, right?
It is the distance modulus of A minus B.
But you're also not interested in the maximum distance that the flight reaches from the surface? Are you interested in that?
What do you mean by that?
The diameter of the curve.
The diameter of the curve. Yes, of course. So there will be essentially three scales here. There will be epsilon, which will be the distance from the boundary, which is a microscopic scale, so the scale of the size of an atom here. There will be r, which will be the typical size of a flight, which is still small. Okay, it is still infinitesimal compared to the diameter of the molecule. Okay? So we will have three scales essentially. Okay. So of course this will appear in the mathematical treatment, the fact that the diameter is finite. That if of course we go far away by a size of the diameter, then the behavior is different. But we will not. I mean, physically.
What's would be interesting to know, at least in my opinion, is the scaling of what you're calling R with epsilon.
Everything will be in terms of epsilon divided by R. Okay.
So.
So let me tell already one point, is that as we will see, the length of to study the length is much easier than to study the time. Okay. But unfortunately, physically we measure the time. So that will be a problem, because I will mainly speak about length and speak a little bit about time. Okay, so now we have to precise the term random. That will be very important. Okay, so we take at random a point of the curve. So what does it mean? So essentially we have two natural models. The first one is, this is the one which will concern us mainly in this talk, it's taking uniform loads, so that all little segments are equally probable to be taken. Okay. So the other possibility, which is also very natural, it's that we choose the point as a hitting point of some Brownian motion started with at some origin O of the domain. So, essentially what we will do to take, so if we don't take a model which is piecewise affine, then we will consider the Minkowski sausage, which will be the set of points at distance epsilon from the curve. So this is a smooth curve, okay, and we can take at random a point, or we can take a maximal number of points distance from each other, at least epsilon on this curve, and take one of these at random. Okay, that's the first idea. The second one would be to start a body motion from a fixed point here and to see where it is. Of course, here we have the harmonic pressure, which is very different from the uniform measure here. So this will give two very different behaviors. Now, another thing is that we have to consider the problem of, is it the first flight or not? Because if you choose the starting point uniformly on the curve, then the hitting point will have a different low. Okay, it will not be uniform low anymore. Okay? And so if we start with any distribution, then we get a new distribution which is after the first time. So the problem arises, is there an invariant distribution? Because that's what we see when we consider experiments. We see that these particles keep on jumping and jumping, so they are after the end step with n very big. So presumably there is an invariant distribution. So we will see that it is actually the case in some model. So is there an invariant distribution? And of course, does this end hitting point will converge to this invariant distribution?
So I'm a little confused. So this business of the uniform measure on the smoothed out version versus the harmonic measure, this is for the first flight.
The problem of the number of flights, it doesn't depend on the low you choose at the beginning. If you choose the low at the beginning, then you have immediately a second low.
So I'm not sure how the two things are enter into the problem of the nth flight.
No, because you see, in some sense, the low of the first arrival,
uh-huh,
it's kind of a mixture of both. Because you, when you choose a point at random here, and then you make a Brownian motion, then of course the hitting point will be with respect to harmonic measure start from this point. Okay. So already you will have screening effects.
Yes,
going to fjords and things like this.
So I don't understand why the two things are so different then.
Well, they are different at the very beginning.
At the beginning, yes.
But then actually I don't know what happens.
That's the question.
Yeah, it could be absolutely true that I don't know. This is open. It could be that if you start with any low, the nth term converge to a fixed invariant measure. That I don't know.
But when you iterate, each step starts with the initial distribution, the heating distribution of the previous one.
Yes.
That's always the case, right?
Yes.
So you can think of forgetting the initial.
Yeah, but also you start very close to the boundary, so it's... So let me show you first experimental results. So in order to get rid of this problem of what is the first flight or not, the first experimental, so this is the beginning of something, so the experimental results here are for very special surfaces for which the problem of the number of flight doesn't occur. So to do this, we just take surfaces which are homogeneous. So something like a plane or a cylinder or something like this. Then it doesn't matter where you land, because wherever you land, you will have the same low afterwards. Okay. So the first. So let's take first the example of a plane. Okay, or a hyperplane in RN, then it's an exercise to show that when you start, if you have a plane here, and if you start at distance epsilon from the plane, you start a Brownian motion, the probability that you you fly at least R from there is y over R. This is classical Cushing shield, okay, which is here. And this gives theta of R equals R minus 2. Okay? So let's try to check if the experiment gives this on some molecules which are flat. So now, what are molecules which are flat? Because of course everything is flat, but at the molecular level is not anymore. So we need to find some molecules which are extremely flat, even at the atomic atom. And this is the so-called laponite. I don't know the English. Laponite or laponite, I don't know. Which is a clay, actually. It's a clay which is at the molecular level extremely flat. And here is the output of this experience. So this is the fit I was speaking about before. So in the continuous line is the computed function relaxing time in terms of frequency, and the dots are the experimental ones, so they fit very nicely. Okay, so these experiences have been done by Pierre Leibitz and his collaborators at the École Polytechnique. So another explicit case would be the case of a cylinder. So we have, and this would be important because, as we will see, so we have to find some, so first of all, the mathematical treatment. Okay, so the probability, if you start at distance r from, say, a cylinder of radius 1, okay, and go up to distance capital R, well, it's just a silly computation, then it's just ln of r divided by ln of capital R. Okay, so we have again to see if this is happens in nature. So hopefully there are some molecules which are perfectly cylindric, and these are the so-called immobilized. I don't know again how to pronounce. So these are molecules which are extremely long and perfectly cylindrical, and they exist in the nature. And I heard that they are used in the printers. Inkjet printers. It helps for the precision. So here we have again a fit, a perfect fit of this function. Now this is another. This is an experiment which has been done in the United States by a completely different group, and this is about DNA. Okay, DNA also looks a little bit like a cylindrical, even if, as you know, there are some helicoids inside. But from the point of view of the, from our point of view, they behave like cylinders, and this is a fit for different, I don't know what. But the important thing here, first of all, this is not water molecules, because DNA is not soluble in water. That's fortunate for us. But so it's different ions in around this. So I will come to this at the end, because we have a project about this, and I would like to speak about this at the end. So
can
now,
you,
let me...
I'm sorry, I have a physics question. Can you tell me roughly what the distance at which the molecule goes away from the DNA, the order of magnitude? You know,
I will tell you. So now the simulation. So the simulations are here perfectly clear. We take a surface, we take a point, we choose according to this law, okay, and just measure the start a random walker from there and just compute the. So the first one has been done by Denis Gravenkopf. He has spoken a bit about this yesterday. I think we had this same picture here. And so this is an approximation to the Van Cork curve, of course. And then you see all these little segments. You take one at random, then you go inside a distance comparable to the segment, and you start a random walker. So this is a different kind. So this is a contour set, or no, maybe not a contour set, but it looks like it's a model for a porous medium. So how do you produce this? Well, you consider a self-affine map from R3 to R, take its graph and cut it by a hyperplane z equals z naught, and you obtain such a thing, which is actually self-similar. And and what do we obtain here? We obtain this quantity. So alpha, again, alpha is the power law for the density of for the time. Beta is the power law for the density of the distance. And they perfectly fit to this quantity. So this is dimension of the surface. It will, as it will be clear later, this will mean Minkowski dimension minus the ambient dimension, which is just where you are in R2 or R3 or more, plus 4 divided by 2. And this is D surface minus D ambient plus 3. And notice that there is a correlation between them, which doesn't depend on the ambient dimension, which basically comes from the fact that Brownian motion in every dimension at time t goes square root of t. That's where it comes from. So these are simulations for these contour sets, for which we have dimension 1.25, so it's a perfect fit also. Okay, now let's try to understand this. So to understand this, I will start with a simple model for which we can compute everything. And so in the model, this model will be simple in the sense that, as we will see, the Minkowski sausage will be important here, so that what will be important is the level sets of the distance to the boundary function. Okay. This level set in a general curve can be very wide. I mean, you can have many components, small ones, big ones, etc. Okay, so in this model I would like to present, this will be not the case. I mean, the topology will be trivial, so it helps. Even if, as we will see later, we don't really need this. So what model will it be? So maybe I show you the slide and I explain at the same time. Okay, so this is a model of perturbating the identity by a conformal map. Okay, so let me recall you that let's consider mapping from the upper half plane to the plane. Okay, for simplicity, I will work in the upper half plane. In practice, it's better to work in a circle, but the formulas are easier here. So think of it as a circle. Okay. So if this is holomorphic and injective, then there is a famous theorem by Kugler saying that y is the prime vector of I1. And conversely, if phi is holomorphic, you don't assume injectivity. Phi is holomorphic in R2 plus, and if y phi double prime of x plus I y divided by phi prime of, sorry? Is it 6?
Yeah.
I think it's 4. Doesn't matter. Less than 1, but then I'm sure this one. Then phi is injective. And a quasi-conformal extension. So this means in particular that the boundary of the domain will be a Jordan curve, a quasi-circle. OK, now this is one point. So this can be seen as perturbation of identity. Actually, it's the only way to perturb the identity, because this is the topology of the universal dimensional space. Okay. Now, what is another point is that if you have any conformal mapping, the distance from phi of z to the boundary of the domain, the omega it will be the image, this is equivalent to y phi prime of x plus y. And equivalent in the universal sense, that means it between 1/4 of this and 4 times this. Okay, for any phi which is holomorphic and injective. Okay, so now what we are going to do, we are going to take one of these curves, which is a perturbation of the identity, and instead of looking at the Minkowski sausage, instead of looking at the points which are at distance epsilon of the boundary, we are going at points for which this is equal to epsilon, when the image of this point. Okay, so we are going to look at gamma epsilon. This would be the set of phi of x plus I y, such that y phi prime of x plus I y is equal to epsilon. Okay? So this will be a substitute for the set of points at distance epsilon, that are almost epsilon. But the important thing here is that if you apply implicit function theorem and if you use this, you see that the so this is phi of gamma epsilon. You see that gamma epsilon is actually the graph of a Lipschitz function. Okay, so you have the level set of the distance equal epsilon is just a curve, and the pre-image in the upper plane is just a Lipschitz graph. Okay, so this makes things very simple. So then we can start to compute things here. So this is what I have just explained. Okay, so now we have this this curve here. So this is capital gamma epsilon. This is little gamma epsilon. And here we have here, so I discretize the problem to make it more simple, but I don't need it actually, because this is also rich. But okay, so I take points which are distance epsilon from each other. And I take a piece of the thing which is essentially at distance r. So this is will be distance r. Okay, so I take a window of size r. And then I look at the pre-image by phi of this. So of course this point will be not equidistance anymore, because this will be harmonic measure and not length. And well, and we perform our random experiment. That means we choose a point here, we make a Brownian motion, and then we look. So, okay, here I cheat a little bit. Instead of looking at points for which the Brownian flight is greater than r, I look at points which go up to this blue line before here. These two are actually comparable. Okay, and I will do the same each time, because this is much simpler to handle. So I look at the probability that this Brownian path goes to the blue line before going to the boundary. Well, before, because of invariance of Brownian motion, this is the same as taking a point here and looking at the size here, that it goes here before there. Okay? So these two curves are graphs. Let's call h epsilon and h r the functions for which they are the graph. And so we have, of course, here the computation is easy, because the probability that starting from here you hit this before the boundary is just this height divided by this height, essentially. Okay, I cheat a little bit. I do as this if this was a line, but you can actually consider this. So we have this probability here. Okay, so now. The probability we look for can thus be written as this. So why do we have this epsilon over r to the to the power d? Because in the box here, this has dimension d. Okay, so you have essentially r to the r mean, because the size is r and the distance is epsilon. So you have r to r divided by epsilon to the d. D is the Minkowski dimension points here. Okay, you take one of them at random. So you have epsilon to over r to the d, and then the sum over xj of these things, where xj are the first coordinate of the pre-images of the points we consider. Okay, but then what happens to 1 over IHR of xj? Well, we use this quantity, of course. So this will be phi prime of x plus h IRJ HR of xj divided by r, which is here. And then what happens to the first thing here? Well, here we use the fact that we have a quasi-conformal extension. So it means that quasi-conformal extension, quasi-conformal mappings, sends circles to almost circles. Okay, so it means that H epsilon, this should be epsilon, sorry, here. H epsilon of xj is roughly the same as xj plus 1 minus xj because of this quasi-conformality principle. So we have actually this, but we have this, and this is the Riemann sum for this integral, and this integral is epsilon over r. Okay. So we have this power law, epsilon over r to the power d, which corresponds. Of course, I don't compute the density here, but the integral of the density, the primitive of the density, okay? The probability that the length is greater than r. The derivative of this would be the alpha, the beta, sorry. Okay? So we have the. Okay, now let's try to investigate this problem of the second flight for this case. So. Suppose we choose a point on the curve with any law, mu, okay? Then, of course, the law of the first impact will be this, okay? So this is a measure-valued integral, okay? So you integrate over the boundary, omega times h of z. So h of z will be, in this model, we can associate to every point on the boundary a point at distance epsilon, okay? You just take the point the half plane, which corresponds to the intersection of the vertical line with these curves, Lipschitz curves we have. Okay, so we can we have this. And now this can be seen as the adjoint of a very simple operator, mm-hmm. which is just you take a function f, okay, and you take its Dirichlet with its Poisson extension, okay, solve the Dirichlet problem with these boundary values, and then you just associate to each point the value of this solution at the point inside at h of z. Okay. So this is a perfect positive Perron operator. Okay. So the adjoint has also one, so it has one as a simple eigenvalue. So also the adjoint, and so we have. You can actually solve this, and so we can show that there is an equivalent measure. There is an invariant measure, equivalent, and it will be equivalent to its harmonic measure. Mm-hmm. But then the problem arises, because this is done for fixed epsilon, okay? And the equivalence with harmonic measure, of course, depends on epsilon, and gets worse and worse when epsilon goes to zero. So what, that is a question I have no answer, so I give it to you. So what happens when epsilon goes to zero for this invariant measure? It's not clear.
Okay, so wouldn't one suppose that, well, at least if one has a fractal by the fact that these laws are multiplicative, that one takes these measures that they converge weak star really, to a nice measure, and this measure satisfies the multiplicative law. If you started out with a fractal,
presumably, but is it more on the side of the uniform measure or on the side of the harmonic measure?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think the issue is, you know, you say it converges, but that's actually subsequential. So you don't really know whether they're two different limits. That seems to me is what the essential issue is.
No, I think there'll be just.
I think so too, but how do you?
The question is, what is it?
No, it doesn't seem to me so clear that there's going to. I mean, how to prove that? First of all, doesn't seem easy at all, and second of all, well, I agree. If it's unique, what is it?
So now, just one slide to see what happens if instead of taking uniform law, we take harmonic measure. So that was the second model I presented here. So it's very different now, okay? And by the way, when I saw first this problem, and when they told me that the simulation gave the answer Minkowski dimension, I didn't believe it, because I thought that since we are dealing with harmonic measure, then we have Makarov theorem. Makarov theorem shows us that the dimension of harmonic measure has nothing to do with the Minkowski dimension. But of course, I was overlooking at the fact that we take at random a point on the boundary, which kind of smoothens the thing. So what happens if we take now the harmonic measure? So we start at a fixed point in the boundary, and we take as a first point, the hitting point of this thing, and then look at the fly. Well, then I have no time to, because the time is going fast. So what happens is that I get what we expect. That is, the exponent will be tau of 2, the multifractal exponent for the harmonic measure. Okay. So it's very different. Now the 3D case. So the 3D case, we have to show that.
Yes. So that corresponds to alpha equals what?
Alpha, I have to think, because with the square root is taking square. No, it corresponds to beta minus 1 equals tau of 2.
Beta minus 1.
No. Tau of 2. Tau of 2, the multifractal exponent. You know, there's a sum, you take balls of radius epsilon, you take the sum of the omega of this square. Okay. And you look at how it squares with epsilon. How it's the power of it.
Okay.
So beta is tau of 2 plus or minus 1.
I mean, the point would be different in that case.
In the case of harmonic measure, yes, of course, it's different. It's tau of 2, it's now d. In the other case, it was d. Okay, so in the 3D case, okay, so now I have to be very quick. So what we will first do is to compare two things. So if we have a domain and two points in the domain, then we can look at the probability that a point starting from one point will, with a Brownian motion, will reach the red curve here, which is essentially the circle of center V and of radius half the distance to the boundary, will reach this before it reaches the boundary. Okay? And we call this PUV, capital U. U is the domain. And we wish to compare that to PVU, same the dual quantity here. Okay? And it happens, though that I have no time to, it's very simple, that we have this thing. So it means that the invariant thing is distance to the boundary to the power d minus 2 times PVU capital U. Okay? This is just by using the Green's function. Okay, and using this, and another property which we will call uniform thickness, which is very usual in potential theory. We want the boundary to be uniformly thick, not to have, for instance, singular points in the boundary or sets with very small capacity sitting in the boundary. And if we have this, then we can, then we use Wigner decomposition. Okay, so I recall you that every domain can be written as a partition, can be partitioned into cubes for which the size is the same as the distance to the boundary. And then using all these things, what we do is actually very simple. Let me show you. So we have the curve here. So we have this. Let's take the Whitney squares of size 2 to the minus m, which will correspond to the epsilon. Okay, so we take epsilon equal 2 to the minus m, and we take r equals 2 to the minus k. So we have those big squares here. So essentially, we look at the probability that start taking one of the Whitney squares here at random and performing a Brownian motion, we get here before here. So this probability will be this. So Wm is the number of squares of at size 2 to the minus m. So we take one of these at random, so it gives this term. And then we look at the probability that starting from one of these points, we reach a point over there UKM, which will be the domain in between. Okay. And now using this duality we had before, we get this, and we get this, and we get the probability here. Okay. So everything boils down to what happened to the statistics of Whitney cubes. Okay. So we have an answer which is in terms of these Whitney cubes. So now we have to see so how many Whitney cubes are at each level. Okay. So and this of course we want Minkowski dimension to enter the picture. So we wish to compare the statistics of the WG to the statistics of the NK, which are the number of boxes you need to compute the Minkowski dimension. Okay. So the upper, I recall you that the upper box Minkowski dimension is the Lim soup here, and so we have this, all these things that of course you know, and replacing the sequence NK by the sequence WJ, we have similar quantities for Whitney instead of Minkowski. Okay, and then we use. First of all, there was a very nice theorem by Bishop. It's a lemma. It's a very easy. I mean, there's a few line proof, but it's very very cute. And it says that the exponent for Whitney cubes is always less than the exponent for Minkowski statistics. And if I mean the complement of the domain, okay, not the boundaries, the complement of the domain, it's not the same thing. Okay. So if the complement of the domain has a Lebesgue measure zero, then they are actually equal. Okay. So for instance, this settles down the case of a contour set, because for a contour set, the boundary is also the complement. And it also settles the case, for instance, of a curve which has not a positive area, which is not much to ask, if we allow to start from both sides. Okay. Now, what happens if we start only from one side? Then we need this notion of porosity. Okay. We say that the domain is porous if you take any point on the boundary and any disk of radius not too large compared to the diameter, then this disk will contain actually a disk of radius comparable to the first one, but which is entirely included in U. Okay. Now, it is very easy to see that if a domain is porous, then WG and NJ are essentially the same, and so we are done. So we are done also for porous domains. Okay. We are done for contour sets, we are done for porous domains. And now it remains the case of SAW. Okay. Because these are not porous. And then we just use, I mean, let's if I got here, okay, I'll go fast. Anyhow, you know this stuff. So these are simulations that were performed by Pierre Leibitz about self-avoiding ropes, which conjecturally, as Duplantier said yesterday, SLE 8-3rd. Okay. By the way, there is a work I should mention, new work on this, because some exponents that you have actually give the same result here, even if the it's not exactly the same. To pass from one to the another, it's not so clear, but it at least it's the same exponent and it's striking. Okay, so we have this, and to prove rigorously that we have the right exponents. So this should be taken as a new confirmation of this conjecture that self-avoiding moves would be SLE 8-3rd. So at least they have the same dimension. Okay. And to actually rigorously prove this, we use a theorem of Bode and Schramm, which says that the conformal mapping from the upper half plane to the complement of a self-avoiding work is Hölder continuous. And when you have other continuous domain, they are not porous, but they are almost. Okay. So instead of having a ball of radius comparable here, you have to go to a level slightly higher for the Whitney cubes. But doesn't matter for the radius of convergence of the associated series. They have the same radius of convergence. So this actually follows from Sharp. Okay, so I think maybe I skip the relation timelines because anyhow I don't have much to say about this. And I just would like to say a few words. I started late, so I arrived a few minutes. So the perspectives that we have is really to take in account the absorption steps. So this is an important issue here. And actually there is a project which is starting now with another group of physicists in Paris. We study a question of predator-prey problems. So a predator to find a prey uses an intermittent strategy. Okay, look at wolves, for instance. They kind of run in some directions without looking for prey for some time. And then when they arrive, then they look for prey. And so they go like a Brownian motion to find this. And then they run again. And so it's an intermittent strategy. And we would like to, of course, now let's consider another problem. Let's consider the problem of proteins and DNA. Okay? Proteins, they must find some very specific places on molecules of DNA in order for duplication and things like this. Okay? So to do this, they also do an intermittent strategy. Of course, it's not a strategy because proteins do not have a mind, but they go either in the solution by random, by Brownian motion, or when they are on the molecule, they kind of walk in a Brownian way, but on the molecule. So that's not clear what is the right model here. But so the strategy here would be replaced by the geometry. So how did evolution construct the molecules so that it's optimized the strategy of search of proteins on the DNA? So that's one of the issues. I would like also to mention the link with the spectrum of the Laplacian and the wild-bearing problem. That's because the exponents that appear in the two problems, this I mentioned here, work by Brossard and Carmona, where the exponents are exactly the same. And this should have an explanation. But it's very bizarre because in our case, we are looking at big times, long times, and they look at short times. So I don't know if it's...
What do you mean by wild-bearing problem?
Oh, the wild-bearing problem, you look at you take a bounded domain and you take the eigenvalues of the Laplacian and you look at the asymptotics of how many eigenvalues are in the ball of radius n. Okay. So Weil gave the first term, which is just, and the second term was conjectured by predicted, because he's a physicist, by Berry, who predicted that it is n to the power d over 2 or something like this, where d is the dimension. And this has been proved by Brossard Carmona, even if it's not the Hausdorff dimension, but the Minkowski dimension. So it looks the same in some formal sense. But, and also, that's something that Denis is starting. What is the link with the reflected Brownian motion and the Benjamin Ischen-Rode work? Because they're also the same constant.
I don't understand you. When the fractal and the boundary, short time and long times are the same. So, and you have a heat kernel representation of this.
No, because you look at exactly orthogonal events. You look at events where they immediately go out, and you look at events where they stay for a long time. It's not the same. Well, at least maybe, but then I'm not aware of this.
Yeah, there is a heat kernel representation, so you end up.
But I cannot make this formal. Okay, so I will stop here. Thank you very much.